You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, welcome back. This is Newsfile. It's your most authoritative news analysis platform. And here on Newsfile, as always, we put Ghana first. And my panelists for this first segment of the discussion, Godwin Kudjo Eduji Tameklo. He's Director Legal, Directorate of the National Democratic Congress. We also have here Joseph Dindiok Pemka, who is former Deputy Attorney General, Minister for Justice, and former MP Timpane. Bobby Banson is also a lawyer and author of legal texts. He also teaches the law. He is also here with us on the program. Gentlemen, good morning and welcome to Newsfile.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you. Great to have you.
Yeah.
Right. So let's take a quick trip to Parliament to remind ourselves of the things that happened on Thursday. As you may well know by now, the presidency issued a letter under the hand of the Executive Secretary to the President, Nana Bediatio Asante, to the Clerk of Parliament. Apparently, Parliament had attempted on a number of occasions, at least three times, we understand, to serve the bill, the anti-gay bill, on the president after it had been passed. Passed by unanimous votes in the Parliament of the Republic of Ghana. They were transmitting it to the president so he will do his Article 106 duty. Article 106 requires the president that when law is made from the representatives of the people, it shall be transmitted to him. And when it gets to him on his decks, a certain number of days begin to count. He has within 7 days to indicate if he's going to assent to it to become law, or if he will not, he should give his reasons and take that through the Council of State within 14 days, and then another process will begin. The presidency has refused to accept the transmittal because they say there are two suits against the bill and the manner in which it was passed, or the constitutionality of it, and that there are injunction applications, and therefore they want to uphold the law by not accepting the bill. That has brought trouble. The Speaker of Parliament had a view on this matter.
Unable to continue to consider the nominations of His Excellency the President, to use the language of the Attorney General and Minister for Justice, quote, in the spirit of upholding the rule of law, unquote, until after the determination of the application for interlocutory injunction by the Supreme Court. Honorable members, this is the precedent that is being set by His Excellency the President for all Ghanaians to follow. So any matter that comes before Parliament, any Ghanaian can issue a writ and follow it with an application for injunction. And that is enough to enjoin Parliament from proceeding with the consideration of the business in the House.
The Constitution of Ghana spells out in plain language when the President of the Republic of Ghana must do when Parliament passes a bill and present to His Excellency the President. The President must assent to the bill or must refuse to assent to the bill when it is presented to him as the President of the Republic. These are the only options. And in this case, there is no middle ground at all per the constitutional imperative. Ladies and gentlemen, let me also say that in the instance case of the Human Sexual Rights and Family Values Bill 2024, President Akufo-Addo has taken a strange and alien position, which is unknown to the Constitution of the Republic of Ghana. Given that Parliament has been injuncted in a matter of the President's nominee for the position of ministers and deputy ministers, it is obvious that this Honorable House is also unable and cannot approve those ministerial nominees His Excellency the President has also presented to Parliament.
Yeah. We in the majority beg to disagree on the position taken by him. If you carefully read the letter that was sent to Parliament, Mr. President limited himself to the processes before the court. And the fact that Parliament itself, through an affidavit, had joined issues. Parliament has filed an affidavit in opposition and is in court. In fact, Parliament is a party to the suit. So for us, we do not see how this would have to affect the proceedings of Parliament. In any event, Mr. Speaker has always deferred to the leadership of the House to guide him in the conduct of business. This morning, the leadership of the House sat together to discuss the various items to be taken. We have finished some of them. There were some that we were supposed to take, and we're told that Mr. Speaker would have to take the chair. It's very disappointing that after Mr. Speaker had made known his own views about the letter sent from the presidency to the clerk, he adjourned the House Senate without giving room for the leadership of the House to even comment.
We may have issues with the letter, people may put interpretations, but anyone is entitled to, as it were, proffer ideas or proffer suggestions or give out opinions on particular things. So I would want to treat the letter purely as an opinion written from the Office of the President to Parliament. Parliament can decide to proceed by sending the law. It is up to the executive to decide not to sign the law because of its interpretation. Now, my understanding is that the letter is probably trying to interpret the law that in the circumstances of the pendency of the injunction, if the bill is brought to the Office of the President, this is going to be their reaction. But the most important thing is all the organs are performing their respective legitimate functions and duties. Problem about the character of injunctions and the principles of injunctions under Ghanaian law is that anybody at all can freeze anything by merely bringing an application to court.
And that's Professor Kofi Abuchi, Dean of the Gympa School Law School, and here in the studio.
UPSA.
UPSA. I'm still at Gympa with him, right? Okay. So Professor Kofi Abuchi, Dean of the Law Faculty of the UPSA. Here in the studio, Bobby Banson. He's a lawyer, he's a law teacher, he's author of legal text. Eduji Tamekolo is director legal of the opposition NDC, and Joseph Demdiok Penka is former Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General and Deputy Minister for Justice and former MP for Timpani. So it's, if you like, a law file once again this morning. let's go straight to the questioning of the attempt to transmit the bill to the presidency and the presidency's reaction, and then the speaker's reaction. The speaker says the letter is contemptuous of parliament. Adiji, is he right?
The Speaker of Parliament, recognizing that we have three co-equal arms of government, and the fact that the legislative function relative to the passage of a law does not terminate even when the bill is transmitted to the president, I think the posturing, the tone of the letter written by the executive secretary to the president, particularly the portion where it says cease and desist, is beyond it being contemptuous. One can even describe it as completely unlawful. Because you see, parliament is in its lawful business of just transmitting the law to the president. In fact, you will recognize that under Article 1067 of the Constitution uses the word presented, the transmission mechanism. It is when the bill so passed is transmitted to the president, he takes possession of it, he can then decide that I want to assent or not to. And the law specifically give the indication that when the president decides that I will not assent, what he should do. We are not being told that the president has taken possession or custody of the bill so passed and has come to the conclusion that on the basis of the pending suit, he's unable to assent. That is a different kettle of fish. At this point, we are still living in the mechanism, the process of just conveying the process to him. On what authority is Mr. Bediatuo Asante purporting to issue that letter? On what authority? On what statutory or constitutional basis is he putting up that letter? You see, it is becoming one too many. A process that I'll describe as sheer misconduct. If you recall, in this studio, you discussed this matter rigorously. The issue of Domelevo having to go. You recall that incident. It is the same Bediatuo who purporting to act on the instructions of the president asked the man to proceed on leave. For the first time in many years, the Supreme Court had the opportunity of describing the conduct of the president, again, conveyed by the same Asante Bediatuo, as unconstitutional. And in fact, if you read my Lord Justice Nene Amegachi's judgment in the coalition of... this is how he described the president's conduct. In this case, the presidency failed to consider that the Auditor General's office as the head of the audit service form part of the independent constitutional bodies. Hence, the Auditor General cannot be compelled to proceed on leave by any authority, especially where the effect of the directive was to interfere with the performance of his constitutional mandate. Today, our courts have found that our president, Nanadu Dankwa Akufo-Addo, obviously acted unconstitutional in purporting to act Domelevo to proceed on leave. Now, is it not curious that where you have a president who is even a lawyer, one would expect a certain level of sobriety, a certain level of sober reflection in taking decisions that have ultimate grand impact on how our governance structure. Look at the tone of the letter.
Cease and desist is English.
No,
It is a threat. You hardly use that language. Any moment Samson Lardy uses that letter to somebody, as instructed by your client, that person carries a certain level of consequence. It means that if you proceed, so it's actually a threatening letter. The tone, the language, does not befit the office. And you see,
Parliament,
the reason...
Parliament attempted, at least we now know, about three times to transmit this bill to the presidency. When Parliament was aware that there has been a suit, there have been suits, at least there is one by Richard Sky, and that there is an injunction application pending, and part of the reliefs that are being sought is that they are seeking the court to prevent the speaker from transmitting the bill to the president. It's one of the reliefs. Is Parliament not aware? So why did he go ahead to want to transmit it?
First of all, if you look at the reliefs that Amanda Odwe, is that the name?
Yeah, that's the 2023 suit.
Exactly.
We are talking about Richard Sky.
No, I'm coming. I'll deal with it too. You see, when Parliament is transmitting the bill so passed to the presidency, Parliament is still in this legislative function.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, after the president is even done, you know, assenting, the legislative function doesn't end, because the president would have to transmit the bill that he has assented back to Parliament. Then the clerk will now do the numbering. It is the clerk that will say it is now called Act, say, Act 223, Act so-and-so.
And then proceed to gazette.
And then proceed the gazetting. So even when the president purports to even assent, the legislative function doesn't end. There's still a chain. You understand? Now, when Amanda took the speaker, among others, to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court said, look, that legislative process is still in process. So we are unable, under the circumstance, to injunct the process. And to the mind of the court, a prima facie case has not been made. That is in the ruling delivered in July 2023. Now, Richard Sky, again, was seeking to stop Parliament from the transmitting. At that point, Parliament was just organizing its constitutional mandate. The Supreme Court had gloriously...
The time Amanda's injunction application was refused last year.
Yeah.
Was it June, July?
Yes, July. In fact, I made a point. July 2023.
Right. She was questioning the processes to pass it. And the court said, we can't interfere until they are done.
Sure.
Okay? So you have come prematurely. The bill is done.
No, I am saying that.
In this instance, the bill is finished.
No, the legislative process has not ended. The legislative process has not ended. In fact, like I indicated earlier, when the president even assents, it must go back for the gazetting processes and all of those things are not done by the executive.
Did she have a specific relief to stop Parliament in transmitting the bill in the manner Richard Sky had? No.
No, Richard Sky was a bit more specific.
Correct.
Relative to the
so process. It says don't transmit it.
Relative to But I'm saying that if you look at the overall conduct, unless, of course, the president has the liberty to decide which court process to respect and which one not to.
That's another argument.
No, but you see, the point ought to be made that I, Edwiji, was the counsel for the then minority leader, Haruna Idrisu, Samuel Okudzeto Ablakwa, Mahama Ayariga, when we challenged the constitutionality of the e-levy law. At the time we were in the Supreme Court, right? The president was assenting to the law while the matter was pending at the Supreme Court. Unless, of course, we are saying that the president has the liberty to be hypocritical.
Okay.
Has the liberty to demonstrate a certain level of duplicity.
Right.
That cannot be the case.
It is either, respectfully,
that you respect that any time a matter comes to your attention, you must cease. And I give you a classic reference. During the NDC primaries, one of the candidates, the presidential candidate, one of the candidates took the whole process to court. Then the EC says, having been served with the process, they're unable to proceed. We said, okay, no problem. Through dialogue and others, the process was withdrawn. The EC came and conducted. Then, during September, the decision to do the limited registration, I issued a writ on behalf of the political parties. The EC was duly served with the process. They still went ahead. I am saying that. What democracy...
In fact, a couple of other citizens also issued
absolutely.
The EC went ahead. So we are not talking about the duplicitous conduct of officials in this direction.
Sure.
What I'm asking now is, from what you know, okay, the relief was that he should be stopped from transmitting it to the president. Should the speaker or should parliament have attempted to transmit it in the first place?
I do not see any limit relative, at least for whatever is worth. The Richard Sky had the benefit of applying for contempt proceedings against speaker or the clerk that pending this matter, they have taken ABCD steps. As we speak, no such intervention from Richard Sky had happened. I am saying that that option is available. If you look at the ex-party Benjamin Dufour position of the Supreme Court,
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It may well be that any conduct that has the potential of undermining the administration of justice can be deemed contemptuous. But in this case, that conversation had not even come up. I am saying that the tone, the language of Nana Asante Mediatu, beyond it being blatantly, you know, it's not grounded in law. I did not see the legal basis of that, you know, what do you call it?
Okay.
And you see,
so I'm getting you to the specifics. So
yes.
Now flip it this way. The speaker says, on the other hand, I have been served with a process.
Yes.
That seeks to injunct me, the speaker, from going ahead, or parliament from going ahead. The speaker is actually a party who has been sued, from going ahead with the approval process for the ministers who have been vetted. On that score, I will respect the court. I won't do anything. Was the speaker wrong?
I won't say the speaker is wrong. But you see, I like the fact that the speaker puts himself in the mode of the president.
So if the speaker is not wrong,
yes.
Is the president wrong?
You see, I have made a point about the cease and desist.
No, we have moved away
from that. No. You see, for me...
I want us to keep ourselves within... Let's keep ourselves within the suits.
No, the point is that
yes.
The letter from the presidency should yes. be construed as
right.
a whole.
So we have dealt with
full,
the letter.
It's a full package.
No, sorry. So you have
so
dealt with the letter.
So an attempt...
I want us to constrain ourselves to the context of the suits.
Very well.
If the speaker was not wrong, as you say,
yeah.
and you believe that is the law, correct?
That should be the law.
The president was also not wrong, was he?
That
he's been served an injunction application.
To
and it is
what?
As good
to do
as
what?
An injunction.
No. First of all, the Bediatu letter is not communicating the president's refusal to assent. That's a different matter.
It's communicating refusal to accept and to assent.
Good.
Because the reliefs include thou shalt not transmit.
Good.
So the one to accept says, you have been asked not to transmit.
No.
I will not accept.
No, don't. So that we...
And if I accept, I am supposed to assent or signify my refusal. The relief also says, thou shalt not assent.
No. First of all, the substantive relief relative to transmitter is not directed at the president. It's directed at the speaker.
Correct.
And so, therefore, you cannot be telling the speaker that don't transmit. If the relief says...
I am being prevented, I'm being prevented from a wrong.
If the relief...
I'm being prevented from a wrong.
Relief,
you are saying that you should countenance the wrong, knowing that I am being prevented from it.
No. If there was a substantive relief,
okay,
saying, Mr. President, do not accept the transmitter of this letter to you, then you can say, there is a relief preventing me from conducting myself in a particular way. There was no such in Richard Sky's process. So the president cannot use that as a ruse to prevent Parliament from conducting its constitutional responsibility. If the process had gotten to him and the president is minded not to assent, then the president can say, having become aware of this, I am unable to put my signature below it.
So you hold on. Yes, Kpeka. So as far as Edugi is concerned, the speaker was right that if he has seen a process, and we know the facts by now, the speaker has not seen an injunction application. Because by the time the speaker on Thursday, when the speaker said, I have seen an injunction application,
there was none.
One had not been filed. Okay? Even if it had been filed, it had not been served. We know by the record that it was rather filed on the Friday, correct? At 10:15, correct? No, that was a Wednesday and then on the Thursday.
10:15.
Right. 10:15 a.m. So, Edugi says, the speaker was right. Once he has seen something like that, he cannot continue. The law is that you stop. But the president was not right. Having been served with a similar process, served on the attorney general, and the attorney general brought this to his attention, he should not be saying he cannot accept.
Thank you very much. Thanks to your cherished viewers. Thompson, it's a very interesting discussion we are having this morning, and the expose and exploration we are making into the legal realm is going to help strengthen our democracy. Now, this is my take on the matter. You've spoken about the transmittal. You've spoken about the conduct of Mr. Speaker and the letter coming from His Excellency the President. Samson, before I actually proceed, I'd like us to read the second paragraph of the letter from Nana Santimedia too.
Mm-hmm.
The second paragraph. And it says, the office is aware of two pending applications for an order of interlocutory injunction, both filed on 7th March 2024 in the Supreme Court in Dr. Amanda Odoi versus the Speaker of Parliament and the Attorney General on the 11th of... 31st, 2023, Richard Sky versus the Parliament of Ghana and the Attorney General. Respectfully, to restrain you and Parliament from transmitting the bill to the President, and also to restrain the President from signifying the assent to the bill pending the final determination. That's the second paragraph. So the cease and desist takes its precedence from the second paragraph. He's saying that don't send it to us. Cease and desist. Why? Because there are pending applications seeking to restrain you.
There is a pending application, applications.
There is a pending application.
And again,
seeking to restrain.
Again, let's also expose that faulty and false claim by the presidency. There was one injunction application pending.
Absolutely.
Amanda's application had been determined. In July.
Yes, I'm reading the letter in its totality.
Right,
that's why I want to put it within.
That's correct.
So, if you look at Richard Sky's reliefs, very clear. Do not transmit. Okay.
And if you get it, you too don't signal.
Don't sign.
Don't assent.
Yes. So, you see, then we got ourselves into this situation. And so, you know, the principle, you've already stated the principle clearly in Ex parte Mufat. And it's very clear.
Ex parte alote.
Alote, sorry. Mm. It is very clear that once that is brought to your attention, even not served on you, even if it is brought to your attention, but it's not served on you, and you take actions that will seek to defeat the purpose of it, of course, you'll be in contempt of the court. But you see, there's a novel situation that we found ourselves in. And I think that there's a very serious matter about this constitutional principle of separation of powers that we have, which is being played out here clearly, with each of the organs trying to assert their independence over the other because of the three arms and all that. If you look at the content of Chapter 8, Chapter 10, and Chapter 11, that if you look at that's Article 57 onwards, then Article 94 onwards, and Article 125 onwards, about the three arms. And then the way it is being structured, as far as possible, separation of powers is actually the arrangement that we have in our Constitution, by taking into consideration the fact that each one of them will, at one point or the other, in a way, not supervise as such, but in one way or the other, they are interdependent to be able to run the affairs of the state. So you have a situation where the president says, I have had this which has come to my attention, and I'm unable to accept the transmittal because the application itself says that do not transmit. And that is why my brother did not answer that when you asked him in all intents and purposes. He didn't answer that question because the relief is saying that do not transmit. So if the relief that is being put before the court says do not transmit and you do transmit, are you not acting contrary to what the relief is seeking? And in any case, if you do the transmittal and it is accepted, then the release the person is already seeking in court become absolutely of no use before the court because they have already been determined anyway. In the end, the court will just come and say that about what you were seeking to do has already been done. You know, and we have to, as much as possible, avoid that and let the courts make pronouncements in order for us to proceed. Because, again, if you look at the matter carefully and the reliefs that are being sought, both in the substantive reliefs and the injunctive reliefs that he's actually seeking, he states categorically what he wants. And I think that Richard Sky, when I read it, there was some level of brilliance. He tried to go around it to ensure that not only should the thing not be transmitted, but even if it is transmitted, do not sign. And so Asante Bedie too wrote that letter. You may have a problem with the language, but that is his choice of words that he...
So from your knowledge of the law, you have not only been, call it a mere lawyer, you have been the Deputy Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General. The Attorney General himself or herself is supposed to be a leader of the bar. What would be your instruction if you entered the classroom to teach law students? Would you say that the pending application that has not been argued and decided by the court should stop the recipient from doing the things they are being
I will say so without hesitation at all. I will say so because if the purpose of the application is violated in the course of the transmittal and etc. and the signature, then it's been defeated already. Then what would be the purpose of it? The application will just go to the table and serve no purpose at that particular stage because the judge will say that what you are seeking to achieve has already been done. So we are unable to make any pronouncement and all. And they've done that quite a number of times. Sometimes even long after whatever they were seeking to injunct or prevent has happened, then the court comes to say that even what you were telling us to do, unfortunately, has already been done. So we're unable to make any pronouncement because it will be of no effect and etc. Several times that has been done. But you see, again, I'm going back to Mr. Speaker.
Wait,
I want to make a comment.
Wait. Yeah. If a party who has received an injunction process proceeds to ignore it, and that's the thing that the injunction process is seeking to stop, what is the remedy?
Contempt.
Contempt.
You go by a contempt application.
Okay.
That's the remedy. You know, because if you seek to do something that will defeat the purpose, the contempt application can be mounted against you.
So why don't you want to wait and allow the speaker to suffer the contempt because you are transmitting it or the clerk?
But that's another choice. And he made a choice which is also not unlawful. He says that obey it. Let's wait for the outcome. But there's something very interesting I'm coming to actually look at. You see, people are misunderstanding the import of the injunctions filed by Richard Sky and that which has been filed by my good friend Roxanne Dafiamekpo. The two are totally different. And I would like us to, if with your permission, I would like to look at just the content of the two. You see, what Dafiamekpo is seeking to do is that there are a number of ministers whose appointments, according to him, The appointments were revoked.
According to the letter from the president.
The appointments were revoked. Yes. I'm just talking about the content of the record, right, the suit. Once the appointments were revoked, and subsequently the president reassigned them, he said that that was unlawful, and that the president could have only renominated them for consideration by parliament. Now, he mentions the Honorable Henry Korte, he mentions Asen Subwachi, he mentions my brother Abanga Abdullahi, and a number of others, and said that by that letter, all the president could do was to renominate them for consideration by parliament, prior approval of parliament. Now, the ministers who were actually transmitted to parliament and vetted do not form part of those he's talking about. All those who were vetted are not part of those he's talking about. So, what is the purpose of that suit? You are seeking to say that Mr. President should have reassigned without revoking, because he cited the authority, which is very clear to all of us, that just reassign, don't revoke, and then reassign. Because if you have revoked, then you have to renominate for prior approval of parliament. And I'm saying that all those ministers he has talked about were not before the Parliament of the Republic of Ghana. They were not being vetted. So, and if they were not being vetted, and the processes and consideration for the president's nominees for ministerial appointment do not include them, to what effect?
Who are those who have been vetted?
What I'm saying is that...
Who are those who have been vetted?
Oh, quite a number of them have been
who
vetted.
Who are those?
You have, of course...
No, not the persons.
Yes.
Which category do they belong?
Those who have been vetted, some of them, in fact, were already ministers. Others were not ministers. Okay? And some... If you were a minister of state and you're appointed a substantive deputy minister, you're appointed a substantive minister or a minister of state, you go for vetting again. Mm-hmm. For example, Abina Osaya Sare, finance.
Right.
She was deputy. And then she was nominated as a minister of state, so she had to go through vetting.
So we know
now,
that.
Now, if you look at...
Can you say for a fact that all those vetted, none had their appointment, according to the letter, revoked and reassigned?
So that is the point. Assuming, without admitting that there are all of them even had their appointments revoked and reassigned, then they have gone through the vetting process. Mm-hmm. And so Roxanne Dafyemi, of course, think, will die on arrival. What he's asking for is what has actually happened.
The process is not complete.
Yeah, but that's what he's asking for, which he's seeking to remedy, has actually been complied with. Senior, he's saying that, hold it.
The letter from the president, if you just read the first line, it will help you greatly.
No, but...
Because, you see, this is the letter from the president, with respect. It says, exit from office. The president of the republic, Nanado Dankwa Akufo-Addo, has relieved the following ministers.
Yes.
And deputy ministers.
Absolutely. I'm not,
let's not make a confusion here.
I think
that is not in question. The question is that those the president purported to or said their appointment have been revoked, they have not been presented to parliament at all.
Yes. So what were you? They have not been presented to parliament.
Do you get the point?
No.
Those he said their appointments have been revoked.
Yes.
And then later said they are reassigned. Those people have not been presented to parliament at all.
Yes. There are two categories.
No. We know. So that category that Roxanne is challenging have not been presented to parliament at all.
So, yes.
Because the intention is not to present them to parliament.
Parliament.
And he is saying you must present them to parliament.
No.
So the question he's asking now is that those who have appeared before parliament, they do not belong to the category whose appointments were revoked. So why are you not dealing with them?
But senior, respect to, if you look at the list, there are two categories, ministers and deputies. Question, Fatima Abubakar was a deputy minister of information,
yes,
correct?
Yes.
Has she not been presented?
She has been presented.
You understand?
She has been presented.
At that time, she was deputy.
Her appointment was not revoked.
Yes.
It's under the list
Roxanne,
of those.
Roxanne is challenging those whose appointments were revoked.
I get you.
If her appointment was revoked and she has been presented to parliament, then Roxanne doesn't have a case.
You get it?
Good. So the point I'm making is that there are two categories.
Yes.
All these two categories are subject matter of this litigation.
No.
Because you see...
No, they are not.
No,
you see... Let's not confuse the issue.
The communication from the president, which I have...
If you allow me, I'll make my point. You see, there are two categories of people.
Correct.
I stated to you that some have not been brought to parliament at all.
Correct.
And for me...
And Roxanne insists they should be brought to parliament.
Those people.
Yes.
He's seeking his relief based on those who have not been brought to parliament.
All right.
And so if they have not been brought to parliament and you are going there, then what are you injuncting? What are you injuncting?
Is that not for the court to make a determination?
Hold on. The people who have been nominated, who have been reassigned, which to you, the reassignment was wrong because there was a revocation. Admitted or without, I mean, assuming without admitting that what you said is right. Those people have not been presented to parliament. So what processes are you stopping in parliament?
Okay, let's not create an argument there because there's none.
There's none.
So
I'm saying that, you see, I don't want to sound subjudicate in the matter because it is before the courts. But Roxin tried to cure a mischief, and in seeking to do so, he created a very huge mischief. And you see, the mischief is created deliberately because there's an attempt to equalize. So because Mr. President said, don't bring the thing, if you bring it, I won't even sign because there's a process. Then Mr. Speaker says, in the same way, eat your own, have a dose of your own medicine. But
the Attorney General calls it totally tit for tat.
Yeah, it's totally different. Because you see, two letters.
Edugi, hold on. Edugi, hold on. Hold on.
You see, it would be unfair on the part of the
speaker. Edugi, hold on, please. Hold on.
But it would be unfair on the part of the speaker to create the impression that as at the time he was basing his decision, he was basing a decision on an injunction that is doomed to fail. That's a determination for the court.
There was actually no injunction at the time.
No, but on the relief, at least there was some.
That's a different relief on the writ. That's different.
But you see, the last relief is
the speaker said.
Yes,
I'm not supposed to be arguing with you. The speaker said that he has before him a process. Then he reads the title of the suit.
That is correct.
Then proceeds to say that there is an injunction motion. At the time, we know for fact there was no motion for injunction.
But
because it was filed the next day, Thursday at 10:15.
No, but there's an injunctive
relief. Yes, there's an injunctive relief. We can talk about that later.
Rate.
If the speaker said, I am dealing with an injunctive relief within the rate, that's a different matter.
Very well.
Good.
You see,
Now, hold on. I want to go to Bobby here.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, sorry. You hold on for me briefly. Bobby. So if we ignored all the inaccuracies and falsehoods in the statements by both sides, and again, I need to qualify when I say it may be false on the part of the presidency that there are two injunction applications, because once the one was dismissed in July, it doesn't mean that the person cannot file another one. So potentially, the person could have filed another injunction application. So it may be the case that there are two injunction applications. Forget about all of that and come to the position. Was the president right? The law you teach your students. Yes, the book you have written, I have read it again this morning before I came.
That's what I'm saying. Good morning. Good morning to Senior Penkind and Godwin. Yesterday, somebody called me and said Samson may be a prophet, as if he knew injunctions would be a huge issue. Dedicated several weeks to discuss injunctions.
Those discussions on the law, myself with you and my friend Jemfi, in Kumasi.
Yes.
I have played them over and again to listen to you guys again. Yeah.
I think that devoid of all the emotions.
Information before this one.
I'm coming.
Just emphatic, you made a correction has been sent to me.
What's that?
The Attorney General says that, as to let you know, that there's a fresh application for injunction by Amanda.
Okay.
There are actually two.
Okay. Thank you. So that helps it. So there are actually two injunctions.
Okay.
When was the fresh injunction filed?
Yeah, I think I haven't gone through, but he stated it.
Okay.
You're not curious.
Okay. All right, let's go.
He's sending this.
Let's go. No. Relax.
No, but it's for correction.
Let's not be preemptive.
Make an emphatic statement.
Let's not be preemptive.
There are no two applications.
We should believe the Attorney General. We should believe the Attorney General.
We'll deal with that.
Edugi, in the absence of other facts, we should believe the Attorney General when he sticks his neck to say that there is an injunction, another injunction by Amanda. Thank you. Yes, let's go.
Okay. Something I would want to lay the basis of my understanding on this whole process. And it stems from the concluding part of your interaction with them. A suit is commenced generally by the filing of a writ of summons. In the Supreme Court, we just merely refer to it as a writ. then it comes with your statement of case in the Supreme Court. So I'll just simply say a writ of summons. Now, when you file your writ of summons, you can decide to include in your writ any relief that you want. Now, in your writ of summons, it has been held by the Supreme Court that you cannot include in your writ of summons an interlocutory relief. So a writ of summons cannot be endorsed with a relief of interlocutory injunction, because then the action itself could be dismissed for disclosing no cause of action. There's a Supreme Court decision on that. Now, you can endorse in your writ of summons a relief of perpetual injunction. Now, perpetual injunction is the final injunction that the court may award after the end of the case. Now, it is also trite that the fact that you've endorsed your writ with a relief of perpetual injunction does not in itself operate as an injunction. And so if beyond the perpetual injunction, you desire an interlocutory injunction, you don't include that in your writ. And I have seen that in some of the writs that have been filed. A relief for interlocutory injunction and then a relief for perpetual injunction. The Supreme Court says that interlocutory injunction does not disclose the cause of action. So you cannot put that in your writ. So what you can put in your writ is a perpetual injunction. Now, if beyond the perpetual injunction, pending the final determination of the matter, you seek some status quo to remain, or a reversal, so status quo ante or status quo present to remain, nothing stops you from filing an application for interlocutory injunction. When the application for interlocutory injunction is filed, it must be served on the party that you think wants to take the step that you are seeking to restrain.
Can you pause there and help me with the education, my viewers? Status quo ante and status quo present. What does that mean?
Status quo ante means something has been done. You want it to be reversed pending the determination of the matter. So, for instance, you are litigating over somebody with a land. You were in possession. The person has brought bulldozers there. You can file an application for injunction, and you can include or describe it as you want the status quo ante. It means that the status before the writ was filed. And so if there was no bulldozers on the land, you are asking the court to order the person who has brought the bulldozers to take them back, so that before what the status was before the writ was filed is what you are asking the court to have it maintained. Now,
until
the status quo...
the case itself has been determined. And then we get to know who is the winner.
Okay. If the case is determined and the court says who owns the land, then the court will perpetually restrain the loser and all those who claim title through him from interfering with your possession of the land.
Then the other one.
The status quo present is, as at today that we are going to court and filing my application, the status is that there are bulldozers on the land. The court should...
Or there is a building.
There's a building on the land. The court should order that nobody should take out the bulldozers, but nobody should come and add new bulldozers. So what it is at the time we file the application for injunction or the writ is what I want to be maintained until the final determination of the matter.
All right.
So those are the various forms of the interlocutory injunction that could be presented to the court. Now, if an interlocutory injunction is filed, whether to maintain status quo ante or the status quo present, once it is served on the parties that we are seeking to restrain them, then those parties cannot take any step which will undermine the authority of the court. Godwin referred to the Dufour, Benjamin Dufour case, and he also referred to the Alote case, the one we say the Mofat. So that is without dispute. Now, in these facts that we have, I would want to deal with Mr. Sky's suit because I have read the writ and then the injunction application. On the 7th of March, he filed the writ with a statement of case and then said that the whole process that the parliament went through breached certain provisions of the constitution. Now, because of that, parliament should be restrained from submitting the bill to the presidency. As Godwin explained, that once parliament passes the bill, it goes to the presidency. Presidency assents, it comes back to parliament. Kuminini, kuminini. Now, beyond filing the writ, on the 8th of March, Richard Sky went ahead to file for an interlocutory relief, asking that pending the determination of the writ, Parliament should be restrained from presenting, pursuant to Article 106, I think, presenting that bill to the presidency.
I understand Amanda Odoi also filed the fresh interlocutory injunction application on the 8th of March.
Interesting. To use Godwin's words, curious.
Yeah.
But I have not read that.
All right.
So I'll deal with it with the Sky's own. Now, once that interlocutory application, and Parliament has not denied that they've been served with it. They have not denied.
That is so.
Yes. So for to all intents and purposes, Parliament has been served. Now, the Attorney General, that is the principal legal advisor to the government per Article 88, has also been served. Has also been served with that interlocutory application.
Because he's not also a party.
He's also a party. Now, if you are aware that there is a pending interlocutory application to restrain a party from bringing you something, and that party brings it to you, and you receive it, in the Alote case, you have opened yourself up to contempt. So you may not have been the person that the interlocutory application was directed to. But if you take a step that will aid that person to undermine the purpose of the interlocutory application, you have also aided. And you would also be liable for the contempt. It was clear in the Alote, S Party Alote case. Now, the presidency, my understanding from that letter, is saying that I am aware. So if I receive it, I've also opened myself up to contempt. If I was the president, I would not receive it and say, take me for contempt. I will not. I'll say, don't bring it. We may have our different opinion as to the manner and the choice of words used in the letter.
That's a different thing.
That's a different discussion. And I think that the communication from the presidency to the parliament, because of the level of authority they all have, could have been done in a better way.
It showed disdain.
It's too strong, because disdain would have to mean there's an intention.
Okay.
I'm not in his mind yet, so I will not know whether that was the intention. But I think the communication, a phone call, a discussion at their level. Remember, the Speaker of Parliament was in Parliament with the President, and they are both senior lawyers at the bar. So they would have had some form of relationship. And I don't think that they don't talk or they've never spoken before. So there could have been some other means of having discussions. But that is another, purely on the side of law.
Yes, I
do not think.
I was asking you at this point, is it your view that the performance of the constitutional function of the executive or the legislature can be injuncted?
So that's a general discussion.
Correct.
Okay. Now, if you look at the ex parte NLA case, which was reported Supreme Court in 2009, that Teban was very categorical. You cannot use injunction to prevent the performance of a statutory responsibility. That Teban was very, very categorical. You cannot by means of an injunction. Because you see, injunction is an equitable relief. And it will only be granted if there is no other alternative. It is very clear. That is why they ask you when you file for injunctions, would the damage or would the wrong that you are seeking to prevent, can it be compensated by damages? Or is there any other relief? So, for instance, if Article 2 says that any step taken by any person in breach of the Constitution can be struck out by the Constitution as being a nullity, if you seek to prevent that step from being taken, that is your right in a substantive action. But if you bring an interlocutory application, the Supreme Court may, and we are having a general discussion without prejudice to the case pending, the Supreme Court may ask itself.
I know why he's posting the caveat.
Yes, yeah, because I don't. Yeah. The Supreme Court may ask itself whether there are alternative remedies. That is key, because injunction is an equitable remedy.
What if the person seeking the injunction against the performance of the statutory obligation can show that there is a breach of law or procedure in the process?
I have no doubt that you must first establish you have a legal right.
Yes.
You must establish there's a prima facie case. You must establish the balance of convenience.
And you must also...
Meaning it is not as of right.
Yes, yes, of course. Mm. And also that there is no other alternative remedy. Mm. There was a case where, I think it's Abu Ramadan, one of the electoral commission cases.
Correct.
Where the Supreme Court said that if we grant this injunction, it will lead to a meltdown. So let's go to the substantive because that's, the fact
that's, that's Ransford France.
Ransford France.
Yeah. When the application for injunction came, this is what my Lord Justice Ansah said. Quote.
In that case.
Yes. Okay. The conclusion I come to is that injunctions may not be used to interfere with the processes of Parliament. And as regards to its proceedings within its own wall, Parliament is completely privileged from judicial intervention. Completely. And I'm saying that the transmission mechanism is a parliamentary responsibility.
Okay, thank you. So conclude on what you're saying.
Yes, so
I ask you the next leg of that question. Mm-hmm. Because the point you made, the general point, is confirmed in the law of injunctions, the 11th edition, LexisNexis, and I was reading it.
Okay.
So, but there is the qualified situation where the officer exercising that statutory obligation or constitutional obligation, so to speak, if they there is proof of a breach or violation of law or procedure, then they may be stopped.
But that is what I was going to say, that if, I mean, we are still dealing with interlocutory injunction, if this alleged breach of statute is the basis of your substantive application, then the court should not. And you can look at S Party Mobile.
Okay.
They said, I think 2005, 2006, Georgina Wood, he said, if what you are asking us to determine by this interlocutory process would result in us making conclusions that will affect
resolving the substantive,
matter, we will not. So if you say that there has been a breach, and that is why you are seeking substantive relief, the Supreme Court will not entertain an interlocutory application.
Okay.
That will delve into the substantive relief.
All right.
But I think...
Does it matter? You all come to the conclusion that the tone of the letter somewhat. But before he says cease and desist, he says, you are kindly requested. Does it matter how it was preceded?
Oh, like I have said, I'm not, as for the lawfulness of what he sought to
not about lawfulness,
I agree.
Not about lawfulness.
If you speak to the content,
does it sound disrespectful? Does it sound contemptuous of Parliament? If you don't take away, you are kindly requested to cease and desist.
I'm saying, like I have said, I'm not in a position to determine whether it is contempt or disdain. That is based on the intention of the person who wrote it and the interpretation of the person who received it. All that I'm saying is that perhaps the president at that level could have called the speaker prior to the letter coming, I think. It would have softened the grounds for the receipt of the letter.
Now let's talk about the speaker's action. Now let's talk about the speaker's action.
Yes. Now, that is also very curious. Again, in all the submission by Godwin and Senior Penka, they have not seemed to diverge on what the position of the law is.
Correct.
They have not. They all agree that this is the position of the law. It's the interpretation and the application.
Yet Eduji, curiously, like Afenyo Marking, appears to say, if this person does it, it's okay. If this other person does it, it's not okay. But I'm asking you the question now, from the speaker, on the facts that you have come to know, was the speaker right in what he did?
Okay, so on the 20th of March,
Wednesday,
when the speaker said that I have before me a process, he was referring to only a writ.
Correct.
Only a writ. Now, the writ that was filed had in it, I think it was Nita Toda filed it, and a relief for interlocutory injunction.
Interesting bit.
And then also a relief for perpetual injunction.
Hold on. Yeah. Go on. I'm talking to Pat,
okay.
Not you.
A relief for interlocutory injunction. Also a relief for perpetual injunction. Like I have submitted, I do not think that it is proper to include an interlocutory
That's
relief.
For a judicial determination.
Yes, let me finish.
So, we can be categorical on the law to the extent we know it as settled.
That's all.
And that's why the law teacher is here. Please, allow him. Allow him.
I hear
a lot of the debate in the public where even media moderators will say, oh, if you put 10 lawyers, they will all disagree, which is a lie. Okay? There is settled law that we must educate our populace to know that this is settled law. And not say, because Edwige says it's this way, this one says it's this way, there's a settled position. So please go on.
So you cannot include an interlocutory relief in a writ.
Right.
Now, as at the 20th of March,
right,
when the speaker said that he has before him a motion or an interlocutory injunction, we all know that there was no such application pending.
That's
true. And so if on the 20th of March, the speaker says that based on an interlocutory process or a process before the court, I'm suspending parliamentary proceedings. With all due respect, I do not think he had any legal basis to say that on the 20th of March. If he had said that on the 21st of March.
So he was peddling falsehood.
Maybe. You see, like when you say that, it means there's an intention. Perhaps.
No, but he said he has an injunction motion. He was playing about it.
Which we all know it is not.
Because there had not been an injunction motion.
It was an obvious untruth.
So it was not so. Now, if he had made that statement on the 21st and said, because there is an injunction application, I will suspend and let Supreme Court decide, I would have agreed with him. But on the 20th, there was no such thing. And
why will you agree with him?
Because
when the suit is challenging a category of ministers who are not the subject, who are not the subject of the vetting.
Yes. Again, Samson, the reason why I am slow to go into that is that then you are going into the merits or the
We are not going into the merits.
Because
let's be plain, we are not going into the merits. Let's not hide around it.
Okay.
We are not going into the merit. There are two categories of ministers. Ones whose appointments were revoked and reassigned. We know it's a question of nomenclature, but that nomenclature revoke can bring trouble. That's why we leave that to the Supreme Court to determine whether once you have said revoked, we should treat it as de minimis, that it doesn't really matter. It's only form over substance. Or that, in fact, on the basis of J.H. Mensah versus the Attorney General, once you have said revoked, you must bring them for prior approval.
Yes.
These class of appointments have not been submitted to Parliament for approval.
And what?
Then the Speaker says, because of this injunctive process, we also want to respect the courts.
When at that time, the people that were before the people that were before them
vetted,
were not the subject matter of the Supreme Court suit.
Exactly.
Then that becomes a different discussion. Because then if at the time that the speaker was saying that the people that were the subject matter of the Supreme Court action were not the parliamentary proceedings, then did he have a basis to say he's suspending it? But I was listening to Mr. Markin, and there was something interesting that came out. I have heard, because I've not been a member of parliament before, that in most of the time, before a speaker makes such decisions, he discusses it with the leaders of the different sides before he comes out. Perhaps, and Mr. Markin is saying that did not happen in this instance. That was curious for me as well. Because perhaps if those consultations were made, his attention would have been drawn. But you see, members of the minority, and I've heard Mr. Haruna speak to it, seems to agree with that position. So is it that there's a fundamental misconception of the people that were the subject matter of the suit? Or like Mr. Tenka keeps saying, it was pure mischief just to derail the process.
All right. Very, very interesting. So there are a few things we have established for you here this morning. And just by way of a very brief recap before we go into the other politics of the discussion. We take a break and return to the politics of the discussion. When a court process called motion or application for injunction, interlocutory injunction, interim injunction, is served on you and you are a party to the suit,
You are not supposed to do the things that that application is seeking the court to decide. You are holding a piece of bread. The other party says, that bread belongs to me. The court should stop you from eating the bread. You are not supposed to eat the bread before you appear before court. If you do so, you have done the job of the court and you are in contempt of court. Number two, that in fact there were two injunction applications pending. One, call it a repeat by Amanda Odoi, who had filed one earlier in 2023, which was dismissed in July 2023. She had filed another one on the 8th of March 2024. Richie Sky had also filed one on the 8th of March 2024 after he had filed the original process, as in the writ, on the 7th of March. In Richie Sky's request to the court, he says Parliament should be stopped and the Speaker is one of the parties to the suit. The Attorney General is one of the parties to the suit. Richie Sky says, stop the Speaker or Parliament from taking the bill to the President. The argument here is that the Attorney General has been served. It says, Mr. President, don't accept it. If you accept it, you could actually also be in contempt and you are not doing the right thing. So those, for now, are settled. And another important thing is that Roxanne Nelson Dafemekpo's suit has nothing to do with the MPs who have been vetted. He is seeking to compel the president to bring the MPs or the ministers he has reassigned to be brought to parliament to be vetted. So if in fact they were being brought to parliament to be vetted, Roxanne would not have sued. He says, you revoke the appointment and you reassign them. If you want them to become ministers, bring them to parliament. Those people are not in parliament. So what did the speaker speak to when he said, we cannot continue the approval of the ministers, nominees whose appointments had not been revoked or who are just freshly appointed or nominated? We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're welcome back. This is Newsfile. It's your most authoritative news analysis platform. And here on Newsfile, as always, we put Ghana first. It's been heated and it will continue to be so, it appears. My guests in the studio are Joseph Dindiok Pemka, who is former Deputy Attorney General and former Deputy Minister for Justice, and former MP Timpani. Godwin Eduji Kujo Tameklo is Director Legal, Directorate of the National Democratic Congress, and Bobby Banson is a lawyer, law teacher, and author of legal text. He has a very fresh book that has just been released, and we all will enjoy it, about commercial arbitration. I'll be hosting him one of these days on my law show to go deeper into that book. Now, we will ask a few questions, but I have some of your messages here too. And it appears that the Speaker and the President, that is the Attorney General, are likely to face a series of suits in the coming days, including a suit for orders to compel Parliament to transmit the bill to the President, and also orders, seeking orders by way of mandamus to compel the President to accept the bill when it is submitted to him, and for him to perform his Article 106 obligations to assent or decline assent and indicate why. Then there may be a suit also asking the Supreme Court to interpret Article 106 and hold that the president cannot prevent presentation of the bill, and that the letter by his executive secretary, Nana Beduetu Asante, violates Article 106, and an order for that letter to be withdrawn. Some of your views here. This one from Emily Quago says, in simple terms, separation of powers is at work, curbing the power of one organ of government that is always in an arbitrary position. Kudos to Gbagwin. Dom Senea says the speaker is absolutely spot on with the decision he took, unlike the president, which wasn't well thought through. Okay, so maybe you send this ahead, or you still send it regardless of all the education you have had. Smooth Low says, at my age, I have seen deferring leaderships. I have never seen any president run down our democracy like our current president. Della Manuel, in summary, a good turn deserves another. Kwesi Citizen says, I think it's a matter of rule of law. Both of them are waiting for the outcome of the court. Amable Benson says, the speaker is following the president by the president. President by the president. Now, during our break, something briefly came up, and I want my guests to express their view on it quickly so we move on. I don't know if it's putting you in a difficult situation if I throw that question to you. So, Bobby, how do you think this can be resolved? The president, in the situation he finds himself, what should he do now? And the speaker and parliament, in the situation they find themselves, what should they do?
I think there are two ways of looking at it. The legal processes.
Right.
And should I say sociopolitical processes? I would want to, in terms of the legal processes, as far as the Supreme Court processes are pending until they are withdrawn by those who filed them, I do not know how much the speaker and the president can do in respect of that.
Okay.
But the sociopolitical processes, I think that we find ourselves in a situation where if we are not careful,
you meant to say you do not know what the president can do, not the speaker, because you have underscored that the speaker had no basis for what he did.
Yes. So in terms of the president, I agree with the position that they have taken because of the specific relief in the interlocutory application.
Okay.
But with the sociopolitical and governance issues, we do not want to have ourselves in a situation where we should think for future generations or for as president that the three arms of government, particularly the executive and the legislature, when they are not from the same political tradition, will not necessarily collaborate. Because some of us were happy when you had a Speaker of Parliament from a different political tradition and a president from a different political tradition to test our democracy.
We were and are, or we are not.
Well, from what is happening, it seems as if, is it for the sake of expediency? Should we make sure they are all from the political tradition so that there would be some form of collaboration?
So they will rubber stamp all the nonsense we sometimes are.
Well, something that is what I'm saying, that if we are not careful to resolve it, that may be the inclination that, listen, have to present
it. It's one of the solutions now, quick solution. Is it for the court to immediately, on its own motion, ask all the parties to come to court and for the applications to be determined?
Oh, yes. The Supreme Court has that jurisdiction. In fact, every court has that jurisdiction to say that due to the expediency of the case, we'll set 5 days, Monday to Friday, we'll finish this case. They are doing it in one of the criminal matters. Mm-hmm. So they can do it in this one. With Monday to Friday, we will solve it.
The only application spending.
But the rate itself, they can fast track it and, what's the case? The timelines when you have to abridge.
Okay.
Abridge the timelines in the rules of court and have it disposed of before.
So do you suspect if they did so?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And then they sit and do it even
there. A sole judge, make a determination, and the matter
will. So they can do that.
We are not close vacation, so let's not even talk about
it. No. The Easter break. They will go for the 2 weeks in the Easter break.
Right.
They can do that.
Right.
But that will not, I think, resolve the socio-political question.
Do you think that the Supreme Court or the court may not be minded to quickly bring all these things quickly and get it done with because of public perception that you want to do someone a favor or the sort?
You know, we have been in this country where the NDC had complained that in some processes filed.
Very recently.
Yes. the Chief Justice exercised administrative authority and asked that it be done expeditiously. Whilst in some other processes, they were allowed to go. And so if you adopt or if you look at that approach, some of the questions that may be asked is, how would that discretion be exercised and in what circumstances? Because almost every suit in this nature has some form of urgency that comes according to the person who filed it. Mm. And so that leaves the room. Now I'm thinking, and again, I bring it back to it. I'm more interested in the sociopolitical aspect, governance aspect. Is it a case where we can have, for example, the Council of State invite the Speaker of Parliament, the President, because something obviously, there seem to be some gap in communication. It is very obvious.
Therefore.
Yes, because if you have the Speaker of Parliament say things like, I will not sit and under my watch, democracy will be undermined. That obviously is directed as the president. Mm. And so if you suggest that the president of the republic is seeking to undermine democracy, there's a problem. If you have the letters that the speaker...
The president has also made a comment that equally are quite, you know...
Somehow
about the speaker.
Yes, so if you make those comments between the two of them, it will not augur well. I think that the Council of State may sit.
The last and a minute. Mm. Is there a solution in the Dafiamapo suits? In the J.H. Mensah case, when he sued and said, the president must submit the people to us to vet. Mm. If he doesn't do that, he cannot have them to become ministers. Mm. Whilst the case was going on, they did the right thing. Mm. In this case, it is the use of the word revoked, which if it was missing, simply saying reassigned would have ended all the issue. Mm. Mm. Can they correct it now?
I think they can. They should, for lack of a better word, eat their humble pie, acknowledge the error they did in the letter that was written to the parliament, withdraw it, and use the appropriate legal language. That would avoid some of these confusion. And once that is done, there's no action. I do not see how a court can enjoint the executive from withdrawing and bringing the... I do not... It cannot work.
It becomes moot?
It becomes moot. So once
you share the same view, Edugi.
It will correct the confusion.
So again, because you referenced the G.H. Mensah decision, remember that even when subsequently President Rawlings submitted the names of Kwame Pepra and others, the Supreme Court came to the conclusion that, yes, it had become moot. But because this matter can happen again, we'll proceed to make definitive, you know, constitutional pronouncement about it. That's but right. You see something, just a quick one. Mm. When I listened to my learned friend, Bobby, he made the point that Speaker had no legal basis in the suspension. I want to beg to differ.
On the 20th of March?
Yes, I beg to differ. Because you see, the Dafiamapo writ is dated 18th March. Now, Relief 9 of the Dafiamapo writ reads, and I just want to read, an order of interlocutory injunction restraining the Speaker of Parliament, the first defendant herein, from proceeding with the vetting and approval of the names of the nominees of the president submitted.
No.
That was the relief. So it is on this basis that the speaker granted his action. There was a substantive matter.
Yes,
and it was on the 18th.
So he's saying that.
Whether, and
so
you
he's
see,
saying that.
No, but you see,
I want us to clarify
yes,
to our audience.
Just 30
wait,
seconds.
Wait.
But you see, Bobby had made a point here.
Yeah.
That in his mind, and the learning, received learning, is that you cannot endorse on the face of a writ in the interlocutory application.
Yeah.
I am saying that. The proprietness or otherwise of that relief
must be determined. By
must be determined.
Yes,
so as at that time, the speaker was not in error if he based his action on that. So at this point,
there was an
interlocutory, an application.
Not application.
No, it wasn't an application.
No, hold on. What I'm trying to say
it was not
it
an
says
application.
An order for interlocutory injunction.
So the mere filing of a writ does not operate as an injunction in the form of an application.
So you see,
that is what I'm saying.
This suggestion
that if you go beyond that, the mere filing of a writ, no matter the relief you put on it,
hold on. Our president, mm-hmm. on the 4th of March, met the diplomatic community, mm-hmm. correct? Mm-hmm. When he met the diplomat, he said he's unable to sign on to the law passed by parliament on 28th of February, mm-hmm. on the basis that there were two pending suits.
Are you reading?
As at that time.
Are you
reading? Were there any injunction, either by Amanda or Richard Sky? No. In fact, on the 4th, Richard Sky had not even issued his writ. So what are you talking about?
No, wait.
It is
no,
either the president is ignorant of the position that you are making. This was what the president said to the diplomat.
It doesn't matter who made the mistake.
That is
the president or the speaker.
So that is why I
think the law is.
Let's clarify the issue.
Thank you.
That this is the reasoning out there.
Clarity.
Yes.
Dafemapo is saying that there are two classes of ministers.
Perfect.
One group of them, you have not brought them to parliament for vetting. I want the court to compel you to bring them before parliament. Nonetheless, until that has been done, even those that I am not fighting against, they too, the court should stop their vetting. This is what this is.
Yes. And in fact, if you read...
How does that sound to you?
No, hold on. If you read the Relief 9, mm. and I do not want to sit in judgment of the processes filed by Leonard Friend here. What I'm just saying is that if you read Relief 9, he says that even those whose names are going through the vetting, court, restrain them until the president performed the task that you are talking about. So the Relief 9 is even more broader in scope. What he did.
The interlocutory one.
Yes.
The interlocutory one cannot be broader.
No, but what I'm saying is that he anticipated the opposition.
Thank you.
And that is why he formulated
the interlocutory one.
The question to you, it was just a minute. We actually have run out of time.
So the suggestion that the speaker did not have any legal basis, I disagree.
Thanks for your disagreement.
Yes.
I was saying that the mootness argument, do you share in it?
No,
If they change the wording of the communication to from revoke, they take away revoke, withdraw the earlier one and bring a new one, this suit becomes moot.
In fact, absolutely. There are many options open up to the presidency. In fact, it is on the basis of the letter that this action is founded on. As to whether the presidency can take away the arrogance, and admit that as a human institution, we are fallible. The wording, because that's about what's
all right,
clear.
Thank you. Let's
that
not
once you use the word revoke, everything becomes anew.
You have to start afresh.
And so if that reasoning is permissible within the presidency, why not? But you see, something, just 30
thank
seconds.
You.
On the issue of cooperation, I strongly believe that this is the most cooperative speaker I have seen. The most cooperative. It is the body language of the president, the executive. That is why. Look, I've heard people in NDC say, Mr. Speaker, this is not why we fought on the midnight for you. We wanted a stronger district. That conversation exists.
Yeah.
You understand? So he's been very cooperative and allow government business.
Thank you,
it is the language of
Akufo
Addo that is becoming.
What do you think about this proposal, which can end one part of all of this tussle, that the government, the presidency, will simply write one small letter to parliament and say, this communication we sent to you earlier, we are withdrawing it. And then write a new one and not use the word revoked. Ends the matter.
Yeah, I have stated time and again that where you come to a state where you have to take a certain step to rectify everything and move on, you do it. I mean, it doesn't destroy anything to withdraw it. It doesn't at all. In fact, it will end all the suits that are being inundated in the courts and et cetera.
The
courts work easier.
Very, very easy. You know, it's possible to get it withdrawn. But you see...
Would you also propose that the courts should abridge the time quickly?
I agree with it. Just give it priority attention and then get it done.
No,
but quickly, you see, let's be very honest in looking at some of the issues. You've stated your position on the matter. But you see, my brother, when the speaker said there was an injunction application,
Let's all admit there was none.
No, he said a writ. He that. Said a process. There was none. A process had been
set. Hold on, hold on.
On the 18th, hold on. No, the speaker went. It's a whole statement.
Can I look like this morning?
No, no, can I
look like this morning? When you are speaking, I say nothing. When I'm speaking,
no. But you see,
use the word injunction application.
No, you see, you are creating the impression that there's.
He said there was an injunction application.
Can we look for that specific pronouncement
and place? And there was none. At the time, he was making the
point. So can I read the entire?
No, sorry.
Can I read the entire?
Yes. Let's hear you. Go ahead.
To help us.
Go ahead.
And I'm saying that smuggling in a relief for interlocutory injunction among the.
How can you say it was smuggling?
Oh, that is my opinion.
Edugy, please.
It's not fair. I don't like that. It's my opinion.
Ignore him and speak. Go ahead.
And then bringing in there so that it will serve as an injunction is completely untenable. So what I'm saying very simply is that at the time Mr. Speaker made those conclusive determinations and said that there was an application for interlocutory injunction, none existed. We have to all admit that, and then we can set off from there. And so subsequently, the application for interlocutory injunction was filed. Mm. But Samson, just to conclude on this matter,
wait, here is the speaker's statement. The last two paragraphs. Be that as it may, honorable members, I also bring to your attention the receipt of a process from the court.
Process.
Relax.
Good.
Titled Roxanne Nelson Echeke Dafiamapo versus the Speaker of Parliament and Attorney General. Suit number J1/12/2024. Which process was served on the 19th of March 2022? And an injunction motion on notice. Relax.
Is there,
and
there
an injunction motion on notice? Seeking to restrain the speaker from proceeding with the vetting and approval of the names. So,
where was that injunction? And
on this account, there was none.
There was none.
I am saying that the speaker.
Admit it, there was none.
No. The speaker made the point clear that two processes.
No.
It's not in doubt that as at the 18th,
okay, there was a we'll not continue with that. We'll not continue.
You don't want to admit this.
What is it to
admit?
I'm not reading the speaker's statement. That the speaker did not just make the statement in vacuum.
Okay, so he had been served with a writ. Thank you.
Well, there was no application.
The speaker said he had been served with a injunction motion on notice. There was none. We must not mislead our audience.
That's all about
there
it.
There was a writ on the speaker.
There was a writ, but not a motion for injunction.
Are you denying
there was
that?
No motion
Are you
for injunction.
Denying that?
That is not denying.
Good. So let's proceed.
You know, again, we were looking at the legal education that we are offering our audience, and the lecturer even indicated it very clearly. You know, you go and bring in an injunctive relief in a substantive relief in an application in a writ before the Supreme Court. You know quite clearly that we're not making any definite pronouncement, but you know the position of the law on that. And so to bring that and use that as a motion, equating it to a motion is also wrong in law, and you cannot equate the two at all. So what Mr. Speaker said at that particular time, I will not say was false. It was an untruth. That he was
well,
making.
That's but the you most, know, when you your president spoke to the
Edugy.
No, but when your president spoke to the diplomat,
Edugy, was stop. Peddling Edugy, stop.
No, but it's Edugy, not fair. Stop.
Edugy, stop what you're doing.
Don't create an impression
so unfair
that he set out to mislead.
It's so unfair to our viewers.
Was it fair to say that the speaker set out to mislead?
Okay. I was going to ask you this question. That would be my very final question on this. I have sat in the Supreme Court where there is a substantive process, writ, without a motion for injunction. And the court cautioned the Electoral Commission not to take any step until the matter was dealt with. There was no injunction application.
On the district assembly election.
Again, if you look at the Dufour case that we have referred to over and again, At page 10, the court said the judicial power of Ghana by Article 1253 of the Constitution has been vested in the judiciary. This power cannot be fettered by any person, agency, or organ, including the president and parliament. Any conduct that contravenes this provision is clearly unconstitutional and as such null and void. When a court is seized with jurisdiction to hear a matter, nothing should be done to usurp the judicial power that has been vested in the court by the Constitution of Ghana. In effect, the state of affairs before the court was seized with the matter must be preserved until the court delivers a judgment. This is so because whether or not the court has granted an order to preserve the status quo or not, a party
to the proceedings will be in contempt if he engages in an act subsequent to the filing of the case, which will have the effect of interfering with the fair trial of the case or undermine the administration of justice. Mm-hmm. The conduct must be one which has the effect of prejudicing or prejudging or prejudicing the case, the case, even before judgment is given. Do you think you need an interlocutory injunction in a suit in the Supreme Court before you can hold back and say, I won't do anything?
Yeah, there are certain situations you may need it. There are certain situations you may not need it. And then your suit itself will address it. You see,
they didn't qualify this, though.
Yes.
It was general.
Hold it. But then several applications for interlocutory injunctions have come before them, and they've also made pronouncements.
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, you take this one in isolation.
The ratio must be in the context of those
context.
Facts.
It's the context.
Because, sorry. If I may.
No.
Like we said, injunction is an equitable remedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they will be guided whether there are alternative remedies.
Okay.
Now, in this country, there was a famous case in the 70s where the state wanted to deport someone. Is it Dumbo?
No.
Ladan.
Ladan.
This was not a Ghanaian.
No, Ladan.
Was the interior
Nigerian.
Ladan
now in Nigeria.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
And then it was Ladan. Filed an originating motion.
Yeah.
And once in that court process, they deported the person.
Yeah,
they were so convicted. That one you look at, okay, if at the end of the case and they find that you did not have the legal basis, you have deported the person, they cannot order that bring the person back. Because such an order, if made, how are they going to enforce it by the court?
All right.
And so it must be situated.
There was just this last bit I wanted to tell you before my brother came in.
Thank you. Thank you.
Last bit I wanted to come in was that, you see, I have said it, and I mean, we are not attempting to pass any judgment on what
30 seconds.
Has
30 seconds.
Done. But I have said it that what he's seeking to do hasn't happened. He's seeking to say that those people should be brought to parliament and vetted. They have not been brought. He's seeking to injunct parliament from proceeding with the approval of people who are not affected by the action he's seeking to cure. So the mischief he's seeking to cure has actually not been committed in parliament.
Okay.
And so what he's seeking to stop...
Thank you very much. And I have... Sorry. Again, there are many of your messages. We are taking a break here. You did that. We are taking a break here. And when we return, we'll be going to the ECG where PURC is asking a number of questions. But if there's one thing that this anti-LGBTQ bill has revealed to me, and perhaps to you, it is that some of our leaders can tell untruths. The president said there was a writ. At a time, there was no writ by Richard Sky. He said it was the next day before the writ was filed. The speaker said there is a motion for injunction. There was none until the next day. We'll be right back.